ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवांसस्तनूभिः व्यसेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्तिनो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ मे वी ओ अब्सल्यूट रियालिटी हियर विथ आवर इयर्स व्हाट इज ऑस्पिशियस May we see with our eyes what is good. May we strong in our limbs and body sing our praise and enjoy the life allotted to us by the Lord of all. Om peace, peace, peace. Today we are going to deal with the 15th verse of the third chapter of the Mandukya Karika, that is Advaita Prakaranam. In the previous verse, it was stated that wherever there is a description of plurality and manifoldness in the Vedic scriptures, in the Vedanta scriptures, it should not be taken as the conclusion of Vedanta philosophy. In the Vedic literature, you find there are two broad divisions. The previous section of the Vedic literature in general deals with rituals and contains praises and hymns addressed to different gods and goddesses. So it accepts polytheism, the manifoldness of godheads. In fact, in Vedic literature, there is a gradual evolution of the idea of Godhead. In the earlier parts, it's called Samhita and Brahmana portions, there are long descriptions of elaborate rituals performed to propitiate different gods and goddesses. So, the diversity or manifoldness of the Godhead is accepted. This is called Karmakanda, means the earlier portion of the Vedic literature. The later portion is called Jnanakanda, the section of Vedic literature which deals with philosophy, the ideas about absolute reality, about the mystery of creation, about the mystery of human existence, and so on. Some of the fundamental, universal, metaphysical, and spiritual questions and topics are discussed in the later portion, which is known as Jnanakanda. That section of the Vedic literature which deals with the ultimate questions of human life. In fact, the great thinkers of modern times like Schopenhauer, Dewison, Max Muller, and in this country, great thinkers like Emerson and Thoreau, they were highly fascinated by the universal teachings of the later portion of Vedic literature, means Jnanakanda. It's called Upanishads. Now, here in the 14th verse, Gaudapada makes a very important statement. What he says is this: we have to accept the views of the Upanishads, the later portion, as the conclusion of Vedic philosophy or Vedanta philosophy. So, what is explained, what is described in the earlier portion, where rituals are described, where diversity of gods and goddesses is accepted, should be taken only in a secondary sense. That's the point which he makes here. So, in the earlier portion of the Vedantic literature, distinction between the individual consciousness and the universal consciousness is hindered. But that should not be taken as the final word. That's meant for those who have not reached the higher level of spiritual or philosophical evolution. So, we have already explained this earlier. Now, we are coming to the 15th verse. Here is a description of different views of creation in this famous work. Now, the verse is this: Murloka vispulingadi srishtirya chodita anyatha upaya sovataraya nasti bheda kathanjana. This is the Sanskrit verse. If you split it, if you give it in prose order, it should be something like this. Mrut loha vispulinga vispulinga dehi ya srishtihi anyatha chodida saha avataraya upayaha na kathanjana bhedaha asti. This is the prose order. I shall explain this elaborately. Now, here is a reference to some important Upanishadic statements given not in this work but in the Chandogya and Upanishad, Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka Upanishads. That's why Gaudapada make so many references to other Vedantic texts here. I shall explain one after another. The first one is this Mrut. Mrut actually means cloud of earth. Now, there is a well-known verse in the Chandogya Upanishad where a great sage teaches his son and disciple the great Vedic Vedantic statement, Thou art that, Tattvam Asi, sometimes called that thou art, you are that. This is the Tattvam Asi, the famous great statement of Chandogya Upanishad. The teacher's name is Uddalaka, a great ancient sage. The son is Shvetaketu. So, the father was away for a long time. When he returned home, he found the son had already reached his 12th year, but he had not gone to school. In those days, you had to think of a period around, say, 3000 or 4000 BC, or 6000 years back. Small children used to be sent to the forest hermitages, Vedic schools run by great sages, and they were supposed to spend 12 years under the care of a teacher, during which children used to be taught higher metaphysics, spiritual practices, and also the duties and responsibilities of an ideal family man, how to be an ideal son, an ideal husband, an ideal citizen. In fact, a clear picture of this mode of Vedic education is found in the Taittiriya Upanishad, which contains a convocation address. Children are returning home after 12 years of training, education, in a forest hermitage. And it begins like this: വേദമനുച്യ ആചാര്യ അന്തേവാസനം അനുശാസ്തി സത്യം വദ ധർമ്മം ചര സത്യാന്ന പ്രമതിതവ്യം ധർമാന്ന പ്രമതിതവ്യം ദൻ മാതൃദേവോ ഭവ പിതൃദേവോ ഭവ ആചാര്യദേവോ ഭവ അതിഥിദേവോ ഭവ എക്സെട്ര ഇറ്റ് ഗോസ് ഓൺ ഐ ഷാൽ എക്സ്പ്ലെയിൻ ദിസ് ഇൻ ബ്രീഫ് നൗ ആഫ്റ്റർ കംപ്ലീറ്റിംഗ് എഡ്യൂക്കേഷൻ ദി സ്റ്റുഡൻസ് ആർ റിട്ടേണിംഗ് ഹോം ടു സ്റ്റാർട്ട് ദയർ ലൈഫ് ആസ് ideal citizens, ideal family members of the and responsible people of society. For you must respect and honor your parents, your guests, your teachers properly, and you must be diligent in the performance of your duties and responsibilities. You should speak the truth. You should never deviate from truth. You should practice dharma, righteousness. You should never deviate from the path of righteousness. All these duties and responsibilities are taught. Then they go home and then they marry. And that's how this tradition continued for thousands of years. Now, in this case, what we are going to deal with, in this case, Uddalaka found his son had completely neglected education. He was already 12 years old. So, Uddalaka sent him to a forest hermitage, the place where a residence where an ancient sage was teaching small children all these different branches of learning. After 12 years of education, the boy returns home. Yes, by the time he had become to a 24-year-old youth. Now, the father found the son had become so arrogant and haughty. He had completely changed. So the father asked him a question. Did you learn that by knowing which everything unknown becomes known? Did you learn that which is the essence of wisdom, which enables you to make proper use of your education for your own good and for the good of this country and society, and also for your spiritual progress? No, the son said, I didn't learn that branch of learning. Is there such a branch of learning? Is there such a special subject by knowing which everything else becomes known? Then father said, yes. Then when the son pleaded again and again, the father teaches him a great spiritual truth, which is contained in the famous dictum. It's called Tattvamasi, you are that. The absolute reality, which is the all-pervading spiritual consciousness, which is called Atman, is the immanent reality residing in all beings. It is immanent, it is omnipresent, all-pervading and transcendental. It is not the truth that you are seeking outside, it is within you. You are that truth. This is the essence of that instruction. Now, in the course of that instruction, there are some important illustrations. Those illustrations are referred to by the author of this work, Gaudapada Kariga. In fact, the 15th verse refers to those illustrations. So you can easily imagine as this work unfolds, as it progresses further and further, there are elaborate references to other Vedantic ideas and thought systems, which are all related to what Gaudapada is trying to teach. Now, here, first one, see the 15th verse, Mrita actually means a cloud of earth. Now, the idea is this. If you can learn the secret or the nature of a small vessel a glass or a cup made of clay, you can easily understand all about the clay. If you can learn the true nature of a pin made of steel, and if you can analyze it, you can understand all about the steel. So, if you can really understand the absolute truth behind, you can know the reality behind. If you go to a seashore, and if you take the smallest grain of the sand, and if you analyze, you can know all about the huge Sahara Desert. Because the wide expanse of desert of sand is nothing but a macro dimension of so many grains of sand. You don't have to go and count every grain that is scattered in the seashore. There is a famous story in one Vedantic book. A great sage was meditating. Then God appeared before him. Then he wanted to know the nature of the world. How many planets, how many galaxies, how many Milky Ways, how many constellations, how many stars exist in this world. Either you will go mad, or if you remain, if you retain your sanity, you will never reach your destination. Because by counting things one by one, we can never understand the whole secret of this universe. But if you can understand the one reality, the one supreme universal truth, which is behind the entire creation, then you will know all about the creation. So that is the idea mentioned here. So, in this verse, Uddalaka instructs. Here, Mrti stated here. Yatha soumya ekena mritpindena sarvam mrimayam vijnatam syat vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam mrtiketyeva satyam. A simple truth is explained here in Sanskrit. The translation will be something like this. By one clod of clay or earth, all that is made of clay becomes known. That's the instruction of the teacher and father to his son and disciple. Uddalaka teaches Shvetaketu. Why? Because all the pots and pans, cups and other utensils made of clay are different modifications, different formations of the same clay. You call, when you make a small utensil, you call it a cup. If you make a huge thing, you may call it a jar or a pot. But to understand, to realize the true nature of clay out of which all these utensils are made, you don't have to go on counting all the utensils, all the vessels made of clay. So try to take the smallest, analyze, and then you will understand it is made of clay. And of the same clay, all these things are made. This is referred to in the first verse. Those who are looking at the verse, mrit loha. Mrit means clod of earth, clay. Gaudapada says, in fact, here description is made, description of creation. Is the creation real? That's a question. If creation is real, then plurality is real. Duality is real. Diversity is real. And the Advaita is wrong. If creation is relative, then duality, plurality, manifoldness are all relative. Advaita is the supreme truth. If you argue that a pot made of clay is structurally different, completely different from a small pot made of the same clay, then you are wrong. Because both are made of the same clay. Before you made the pot from the clay, it was clay. You break it, then also it goes back to clod of earth. The same thing which existed before you made the pot. Now, what about the pot which is standing in front of you, sitting in front of you? It is not different from the earth, the clay out of which it is made. So, Gaudapada says, all these manifoldness, diversity, plurality, all these are relative. They do not assert the reality of the world. World is real only in a relative sense. See, Advaita doesn't tell you the world is totally non-existent. Advaita, non-dualistic philosophy, never tells us that this world is absolutely unreal. It only tells us that this world is not absolutely real. That's only me. It is not absolutely real. Just as when you break the pot goes back to what it was before the pot was made from the clay. Similarly, the world associated with name and form is seen to be the supreme reality when a jnani, a spiritually elevated soul who had realized the truth of Advaita, looks at this world. He sees the same world, but behind this manifoldness and diversity, he or she sees the unchanging supreme consciousness. So that's one. So loha is mentioned. Loha means metal or gold. There's another verse is there. So Gaudapada Kariga, or the author Gaudapada, is referring to all these statements made in other Vedantic texts. This comes in Chandogya. Again, there is another equally eloquent statement from Uddalaka. It comes from Uddalaka. Uddalaka says, you take a nail scissor, nail cutter, the smallest nail cutter, which is made of cast iron or whatever it is. If you know what it is made of, then you will know all about the metal out of which it is made. So, that is the state. Yatha saumya ekena nakha nikrindanena sarvam kashnayasam vijnatam syat vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam krishnayasam itteva satyam. It goes on. But the statement is this. If you know the microcosm, you know the macrocosm, because both are the same. In other words, when you look at the macrocosm from a limited angle, you see the macrocosm as microcosm. If you look at the microcosm from a universal angle, you don't see the microcosm, you see the macrocosm. So that is the idea which Gaudapada is bringing out here. Because Vedanta believes that the effect is already pre-existent in the cause, which is technically known in Vedantic terminology. Some of the students asked last time, it's called Satkaryavada. Satkaryavada is a particular approach, a methodology, a school of thought in Vedanta, which tells you that the effect is not different from the cause. The effect is already pre-existent in the cause. The effect is nothing but a gross manifestation of the cause. Cause is nothing but a subtle dimension of the effect. Just as this, the golden ornaments are already pre-existent in the gold. Various instruments, utensils, and vessels made of clay are already pre-existent in the clay. The cloth is pre-existent in the thread or in the cotton out of which the cloth is made. Why? Because you cannot separate the cloth from the threads out of which the cloth is made. You cannot separate separate the earth or the clay from the vessels from which from the vessels which are made from this clay. If you remove the clay from the vessel which is made of clay, then the vessel also will disappear. It will go back to clay. That's the idea behind. Similarly, Gaudapada says that all these descriptions about creation in the scriptures should be understood from a relative point of view. Creation is explained not to establish that creation is real, but to establish that creation is unreal. That's the point. You find the Upanishadic statement. So many statements, elaborate statements describing this world. What's the purpose? The Upanishadic rishis, sages, want to come down to our level. And then coming down to our level, they ask us, see, look at the world which you are talking about, which you mistake to be real. What is its nature? And then the world is explained. And then as we go deeper and deeper into the true nature of the world, we are convinced that the world that we experience, the world in which we live, the world of which we are a part, is real, but only relatively real. This earth itself, we know very well. Earth may exist in the present shape and form maybe for a few millions of years. How many stars and galaxies have vanished? If you go to, if you see a film made from the outer space, if many space travelers have made, if you look at the vastness of the universe, the galaxies, the countless number of stars and planets and galaxies and Milky Ways. So you can find many of them vanish, stars die out, new stars are born, all these things are taking place. So maybe these stars may exist for several trillions of years. An insect may exist for a few minutes or hours. Both are equally unreal. In what sense? Both are not absolutely real. Because to be called absolutely real, they should exist without any change, without any modification in the past, present, and future. And anything which is born, existing maybe for some trillions of years, and then vanishing, is unreal in the absolute sense. They are real only in a relative sense. They are unreal in the absolute sense. Then what is the reality? The reality is something that we can never explain in words. We can only experience in our innermost heart, which the Upanishads call Atman or Brahman. So Gaudapada is hinting at the relative nature of the created world. In this context, he is indirectly referring to many other schools of thought. Perhaps a short description of different schools of creation may be relevant here. But there are different schools of creation. In fact, there are some schools of philosophers who assert that the world is real. They would tell you that effect has no relationship with the cause. See, I can give you an example. Well, you make clothes from threads. Threads are made from cotton. Now, a Vedantin will tell you, well, this cloth is inseparably related to threads. It's called Samavai Karanam. I'm not going into those details. there is complete inseparable relationship between the cloth and the threads which actually constitute the cloth, or the golden ring and the gold itself, or the earthen pot and earth itself. This is Vedantic view. But there are some schools of thought who tell you it is not so. There is no relationship at all between the cloth and the thread. On the surface of it, it may look a bit ridiculous. They will tell you, you cannot use threads for wearing the way you are using cloth. Cloth can be used for, you can stitch a shirt, you can wear it, but you can't do that with a thread. A gold that is excavated from earth cannot be worn in your neck as you are wearing a necklace. So they will tell you there is a difference with regard to utility or usefulness, practical application. And this practical application is called vyavahariga buddhi, means the practical application. The effect is entirely different from the cause. Similarly, this world is altogether a new creation. This world has absolutely no relation at all with the supreme cause from which it has evolved. They believe the earth is altogether a new creation. But the other school of thought, in fact, those who believe that the effect is not pre-existent in cause, they are called the exponents of asatkaryavada. In Sanskrit, this is a well-known expression in the students of Indian thought. Asatkaryavada means those who an argument or a viewpoint which tells you that effect is not pre-existent in cause. In opposition to this, there is the other school, Satkaryavada. They believe that effect is already pre-existent in the cause. Just as the golden necklace is pre-existent in gold, the earthen pot is pre-existent in the cloth of earth from which it is made. So, it is only a modification of the cause. And among these philosophers who believe that the effect is already pre-existent in cause, there are two main streams. According to some philosophers, the cause evolves into effect. It's called Parinamavada, Ramanuja and Sankhya school of philosophers. Especially the Sankhya and Yoga schools, you know, they believe that the cause undergoes evolution and becomes the effect. Now, if we believe that the cause evolves into effect, then once it becomes effect, the effect has got a separate entity, the cause has got separate entity from effect. Which means you have to accept plurality and duality. But Advaitins' view is different. Though they are exponents of Satkaryavada, the view that the effect is pre-existent in cause, still they believe that the cause does not evolve into effect. That change is only apparent. It's called Vivartavada. The cause never actually permanently becomes the effect. That transformation is only apparent. How do you relate this to this world and Vedanta? The explanation is this. This world, the world in which we are living, is actually not different from Brahman or Atman, but not the world as we see it. The world that we see is a world of plurality and manifoldness, diversity and duality. Everything is different from everything else. You can't say mountain is the same as valley is the same as the bay, the ocean is the same as a river or a mountain. You can't say that. So there is diversity, difference, distinction, and plurality. Then how do you explain the idea that all these are together pre-existent in the cause? Now Vedanta tells, this diversity, this plurality is the result of association with name and form. And names and forms are only modifications of speech. Vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam. That I explained earlier. Uddalaka's great teachings to his son as part of Tattvamasi, that statement. You are that supreme reality. So, the idea is this. If you look at this world and dissociate this world from its name and form, which constitute manifoldness, then this world is not different from Brahman. So that's why in the Upanishad 7, Sarvam Khalu Idam Brahma, I tell you, there is an interesting and a very striking incident in the lives of one of the great disciples of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, the teacher of Swami Vivekananda. The Swamiji's name was Swami Turiyananda. Incidentally, he was the one who came to Bay Area, who came to San Francisco, who went to Shanti Ashrama about 100 miles away from here, who started a great hermitage there, and who stayed for 2 years and taught Vedanta and yoga to a group of very intimate, dedicated students from San Francisco. When he was passing away, he called out, and to those who stood around him, he said, Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. Now, if you read the Vedantic texts, this is Brahma Satyam, Jagat Mithya, he stated. Jagat means this world, this universe, the world in which we are living, that's Jagat. Mithya means not absolutely real. Mithya doesn't mean non-existent. Mithya does not mean illusion or dream. Mithya actually means something which appears to exist, but really speaking, not real in the absolute sense. That's the true implication of the word mithya. Something which appears to be real. Well, can we believe that these hundreds of millions of stars which emerge and live for some billions of years and then vanish, they're absolutely real? If they were absolutely real, they will not vanish, they will not cease to exist after trillions of years. No, they will continue to exist. And if they are absolutely real, they will never emerge because they are always existing, so they cannot come into existence. They can never take birth because they are never dead. They can never come into existence because they are never non-existent. So, the true meaning of mithya is this: something which appears to exist but not real in the absolute sense of that term, which comes into existence, may stay maybe for a few minutes like some bacteria or insects, maybe for trillions of years like stars or galaxies. They're all mithya. Now, this mithya or this relativity is associated with name and form. A form is invariably associated with a name. When you have something with a definite form, you have to call it by a word, which is called name. So name and form constitute relativity. The moment you dissociate, you separate name and form from this world, then it is Brahman only, it is Atman only. It is real. They are mistaken to be born because a new form is emerging, so a new name is here. The moment you dissociate yourself from the name and form, then you can look at this world and see the world as non-different, non-distinct from Brahman or Atman, which is eternal, absolutely real, which is unborn, and which is immortal. This is the idea behind. So, this Swamiji, Thiruswami Thiruyanandaji, before he passed away, he made the statement, Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. Jagat means this universe. This universe seen as Brahman is the same as Brahman. That's the idea behind. In other words, Brahman associated with name and form is this world. This world minus name and form is the same as Brahman. That's the idea behind. So, according to Vedantins, the emergence of this world from Brahman is only an apparent manifestation. Apparent means impermanent. It is not absolutely real. So, Gaudapada is referring to these illustrations in the famous verse. So, see, Mrit Loha Vispulinga Dehi. Again, Vispulinga actually means sparks. These are the illustrations given. This comes in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Famous statement is there. Spark coming from fire. Are the sparks different from the blazing fire from which the sparks are coming? Well, if they are not different from the blazing fire, then how do they jump? How do they appear to be different? Maybe thousands of sparks may emerge from a blazing fire. But then you know that in their true nature, these sparks are the same as the blazing fire. But then sparks are tiny and short-lived. Sparks come out and appear to be different from the blazing fire. And then, for some time, they appear to exist independently, and then they vanish. But the blazing fire continues to exist. The sparks have no existence independent of the blazing fire, of the fire. But fire can exist independent of sparks. That's why in Vedanta, this famous statement with regard to this world. Nama rupa drishtya mithya surupa drishtya satyam. The meaning is this, that's what Swami Thiruyanandaji stated again and again. If you look at the absolute reality through the prism of name and form, then this world is manifold and it is in fact relativity or relative. When you look at the same world without associating it with name and form, then it is the same Supreme Brahman. Similarly, when we look at ourselves as this body, which is a form, so we just got a name, senses, mind, emotions, ideas, then we are different from one another. 7 billion people in the world are 7 billion independent separate entities. If you look upon them as bodies, as mind, if you associate them with emotions and thought processes. But in all these 7 billion people, the same Atman, the same Supreme Consciousness exists as the immanent reality. If you look at it, look at the whole humanity, which consists of 7 billion people, then the entire humanity is one spiritual entity. That is the idea which Gaudapada is driving home again and again. So his statement is nasti bheda kathanchana, no distinction at all. That is what he drives home again and again. In fact, the Brihadaranyaka statement is very, very interesting. Sa yathornanabhi tandunocharet idhaknehi shudra vispulinga vicharanti. You can find here, see, as a spider moves along the thread. That, see, the thread with which a spider makes its nest comes out of itself. And the spider absorbs it into itself. So is the nest different from the spider? The thread with which the spider weaves its web, makes its web, nest, is coming from itself. So as a spider moves along the thread, and as small sparks come forth from the fire, similarly, from this Atman, this self, come forth all these different manifestations, names and forms of the universe. The moment you realize that they are coming from the same reality and they exist in the same reality, they go back to the same reality, then we will understand that individual self and universal self are the same. Nabhedaha, no distinction at all. This is the statement made by Gaudapada in this 15th verse. Now we will go to 17th verse. In the 16th verse, there is a statement that this is all the different phases of life, you know, and all the different forms of worship, spiritual practices, which are manifold and diverse, are meant for spiritual seekers belonging to different grades and different levels of evolution. That's the idea behind. Now we'll come to 17th verse, which actually underlines the universalism of Advaita philosophy. 17th verse. So siddhanta vyavasthasu dvaitino nischita dridham parasparam viruddhyande taihi ayam na viruddhyate. The famous statement which is quoted again and again in many scriptures. The prose order is susiddhanta vyavasthasu dridham nischitaha dvaitinaha parasparam viruddhyante ayam taihi na viruddhyate. This is the simple translation. Now we shall explain. The idea is this. Those who believe in plurality and duality. Now, what will be their attitude towards those who are different from them? If you believe in plurality, then you believe in distinction and differences. And you quarrel. See, pluralism is a great ideal if you admit that all have got the same essential nature, or all can coexist. But if you believe that each path is different from each other path, and if everyone believes that his own path alone is right and everybody else is wrong, then it leads to confrontation and conflict. That point is hinted at by the author. Those who believe in plurality, in the absoluteness of plurality, in the absoluteness of duality and distinction and differences, and those who believe that there is no common ground at all, everybody is different from everybody else, and along with that, also believe that his own or her own path alone is right and everybody else is wrong, what do? They fight among themselves. On the other hand, those who are upholders of non-dualistic philosophy, Advaita, have no quarrel with anyone. Why? Example is this. Shankaracharya, in his famous commentary, makes a statement. He says, Anyone virodhipihi asmadiyoyam vaidhiko dharma na viruddhide. Atma ananyatva. I shall explain this. Shankaracharya says, these Advaitins, the upholders of Vedanta philosophy, have absolutely no quarrel with anyone because they believe that everyone in this world is essentially one spiritual entity. Spiritually, the creation is one. Humanity is one. The whole humanity is one spiritual family. And then he makes a statement, Yatha sohastapada dibhihi. So you cannot fight with your own hands and your own legs. If you are angry with your right hand and you hit your right hand with your left hand, you alone will feel the pain. So with whom can you quarrel? Atma ananyatva. You are the Atman. You are the consciousness, supreme consciousness, the immanent reality within, and the same immanent reality is also the all-pervading, omnipresent reality, which is the inner reality, the immanent reality existing in all beings. Then how can you fight with anyone? Fighting with another person will be fighting with your own hands and legs and head. If you are angry with your own head and you hit your own head, you will feel the pain. So, no, you cannot actually think of anyone as distinct and different from yourself. So you can find Holy Mother's teachings or Sri Sarada Devi's teaching, very simple. You have to look upon everyone as yourself, as your own. Swami Vivekananda makes an important point in the Inspired Talks. He says, this Advaitic view is the highest philosophy of ethics and morality. Swamiji's statement is this: the infinite oneness of the soul is the eternal sanction of all morality, all ethics, and all good actions. Why should you be moral? You ask the question. In fact, if you read the works of some of the modern agnostics, scientists like Richard Dawkins, the great atheist who passed away, Christopher Hitchens, many of these great thinkers, they were great humanists. They spoke and wrote for peace and universalism and universal peace. They were great humanists. Very often you find many of the great thinkers in modern times, they denounce religion because religion sometimes becomes very divisive. It has created more problems for mankind than good, according to many of these agnostics. May not be true, but there is a point in what they say. There have been bloodshed and wars in the name of religion and on behalf of God for the last several centuries. Now, Swami Vivekananda says, the infinite oneness of the soul is the eternal sanction of all morality, all ethics, and all good actions. Traditionally, religions consider fear of God or fear of hell as the criterion or as the criterion of morality. Fear of God, God's punishment. Or you are threatened with eternal damnation in hell. If somebody tells you, well, I don't mind going to hell, then what ethical philosophy can you discuss with him or with her? But if you tell that person, well, by hurting somebody, you are hurting yourself. That ethical philosophy is so humanistic, so deeply and profoundly humanistic. So, It's not fear of God that's the ultimate criterion of ethics and morality. Because it's a shaky foundation. People can very easily say, well, I'm leading a good life in this world. I don't hurt anyone. Why should I? Still, if I don't believe in God, will God send me to hell? And there are people who believe in God, who do all kinds of evil things, and they're sent heaven. What kind of God is that God? So, Shankaracharya says that those who believe in the spiritual unity of creation, spiritual unity of existence, cannot and will not hurt anyone, because hurting anybody else is the same as hurting oneself. Because spiritually, we are hurting ourselves when we try to hurt somebody else, because existence is one. That's why, see, the parasparam viruddhyante taihi ayam na viruddhyate. So those who believe that their own religion is the right religion, every other religion is wrong, their God is a special God who has promised something special for them. Others are all devil's children. Now such people have no time, they have to do anything good, they have time only to fight with others. But Gaudapada says, this Advaita, this non-dualistic philosophy, the Vedantic philosophy has no quarrel with anyone. Whatever may be your path, whatever may be your belief, if you accept the creation is one, the reality is one, and the consciousness, the divine consciousness is present in all beings, you accept the spiritual unity, the spiritual oneness of existence. So we have no quarrel with anyone. In fact, this Advaitic foundation of universal ethics is brought out in this verse by Gaudapada in four small lines. So Siddhanta Vyavasthasu Dvaitino Nischida Dridham. They are so sure that their own path is right, those who uphold the dualistic view, those who uphold that their own path is right, everybody else is wrong. They are so strong in upholding their own views. And that brings them into quarrel and conflict with everybody else. But Advaita, non-dualistic philosophy or Vedanta, has no quarrel with anyone, because they look upon others as non-distinct, spiritually non-different from themselves. That idea is brought out in a very famous verse, the 17th verse of the Advaita Prakaranam. Now we will conclude here. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tatsa. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.